as far as doing the leadership training and sort of thing.
So even with, so, okay.
Even if all the resources were available.
You can only take them so far, actually, and if they don't want to continue on, there's not much the commission can do, money or no money, I would think. They have to stand on their own 2 feet eventually.
Yeah, I would think so too, but it would seem to me that at least training the leadership, getting them off in the right direction would be, would be important, and if the resources were available. And then after that, of course, you can't micromanage all their meetings, but at least...
And I, and in terms of this transition too, some different ideas have been discussed. Perhaps next year, if BIPs doesn't feel like they're ready to do this, perhaps a contract arrangement might be arranged where I could continue to do that, but they're paying for it, you know?
That makes sense.
So that would be one way to begin to take, start taking more ownership of that. I did encourage a committee of people to work with me in terms of telling me what they need in their leadership training. That was instituted last year, and I did get some positive ideas from that, one of which was to expand the workshop as it was done this year. That came out of the committee, and I think that was a good idea. So whatever I can do to help the BIP leadership recognize that they do have some need for leadership. I think that so long as we do it, there's not that sense of urgency for leadership development, okay? And their survival depends on this, you know? Many of the current leaders in the BIP organization are getting older, you know? So there needs to be a way of identifying people that are moving up. Now, this year, we've had a much better response than we have had in earlier years. So I would say that the numbers are perhaps double the response that we've had. I'm expecting 19 to 20 people in Lincoln next week. That'll be the largest training session that I've done so far. So and many of these people do not currently have leadership positions, but they're interested. They're interested in becoming more involved. And that needs to be encouraged in a way that it hasn't had, in a way that it hasn't been before. So I think that that needs to be done if this is going to be, is going to survive.
Have you tracked, Bob, where most of the people from the older blind that contact the commission, how they hear about the commission? Do they get it from their ophthalmologists or just?
No.
Right. Capital, no underline.
Okay. So how did you find out about it, Betty and Bob?
The services notified me. With me, I got a retinal detachment, 98, I guess it was. And to be perfectly frank, I went into a state of depression for a few years. I mean, you know, it was devastating. But then, and the services kept, you know, Robert just kept at me, and eventually I said, you know, I'm awful tired of sitting on my desk.
Well, how did he find out about it?
So I keyed out, so, yeah.
How did Robert find you?
Oh, Robert knows me.
Oh, okay, so it's just a personal, so you were just happen to know the right people.
You'll have to ask Robert how come but he definitely, worked with me to get me back in, so I'm glad that happened.
So you knew Robert in private life?
Well, I knew Robert both private and professional. I mean, the services helped me clear back in 19, of course Robert wasn't around then, but 1950 and 51, they sent me through radio technical school, and then the services helped me go through Datability, about 1990, and so the services have been there for me every step of the way when I wanted to change fields.
You know, it occurs to me, we heard Betty's story, and then we heard from Bob about Home Teaching Plus, but I wonder if I think maybe we need gonna give you more of a chance to tell your story.
Well, okay, I'll try to keep it brief because I know we're on a tight schedule, but about 1949, Vaughn Peterson, who was at that time the owner of Radio Engineering Institute, somehow saw something in me, and so he asked me, would you like to come we'll give you training as an electronic technician through the summer, and the only thing you have to do, we'll hire you, and the only thing you have to do is run errands for us. So I took the training, and I like one duck goes to water, it just boom. And so I found, so then he called me into his office in August and said, well, okay, we have it all arranged. If you want, you can take, the services for the visually impaired. We'll give you the full bore training to become an electronic technician. I had to make a decision then, should I or should I not leave high school? And I chose to leave high school for this opportunity. So that was the first time that the services helped me, and as a result, I serviced television sets for over 40 years. So I would say that the services, it was fruitful for them to help me, because then I could live a good life, for 40 some odd years. Then I found out that after 40 some odd years, that somehow or other, TV service was not really helping much, because they were going into solid state. And TV sets weren't going bad as much because there weren't no tubes anymore. and so I found this little 2x2 ad in a paper about dateability, and dateability was held at the Goodwill, right? They had the board of directors that was running that thing were about 30 people from various businesses that were doing, computer programming, and so I kind of decided, I think maybe I ought to change trades and go into data automation. And so the services for the visually impaired again were right there, and they sponsored me through that training. And until I lost my sight, I was working at First National Bank as a programmer analyst. So the services have helped me all the way through. After that, I lost my sight, and then I went into depression for about a year or so, but then the services really brought me back. Frankly, it's been talked here about the Home Plus and everything. Home Plus was a wonderful experience, but I could see the expense, and also it really didn't reach many people. But what it did reach, the people that it did reach, it really enriched their lives. And it was a wonderful thing, and I think the money was well spent. But when you don't have a lot, you have to figure out plan B. The training that Jane had here for us was a once a month type thing. And there again, every month was a different area of training, and I think the same kind of thing was being realized through this type of training. And I for one she taught me how to use a white cane, and now I'm pretty mobile. There are some limitations, like I will not cross 84th Street, for instance. That's just too busy for me. But I value my life. but I do get around, and thanks to Jane, and she turned me loose in Oakview Mall. And the first time she was with me, and the second time we went out there, she's okay, Bob. She says, go ahead and find Radio Shack. And I says, okay. And the next thing I know, she was gone. I mean, I was okay. So I had to figure out, do a little problem solving, how to find that place. And if you've ever been in Oakview Mall, it's not an easy place to.
No, it's not.
But the services give you challenges, and they help you to problem solve. That's the whole thing. But this training has been really good for me, and I think that, like has been said here, I think that this kind of training is good and probably is a lot more cost-effective, you know, than these five-day old training things. One thing you do learn, though, with the five-day thing is you go to a motel, you have your own room, and it's up to you to get around from point A to point B, and you know, it's an experience to go to a motel. You know, that's one of the things that you learn. But anyway, that's my experience. Right now, Robert Newman is helping me to find a job. I want to get back into data automation again. And so I've been working on that, and Robert is working to help me find a job. So that's my story. And if anyone has any questions for me, I'd be glad to field them.
Well, thank you. One of the things that I'm interested in, you know, we don't have a lot of time left for this topic, but I'm always interested in how each of the things that the commission does affects other things that the commission does. And while I think that the short-term things are really good, and sometimes those are the things that people will get themselves involved with to begin with, I'm wondering how this approach works with respect to the orientation center.
Well, I think if people are able to, exercise that option, we promote the orientation center when we can. You know, I mean, if there's an opening and people want to come, that's certainly fine. So I think when it comes to people over 55, that's not an option that people choose very often. Okay, but we have had a number of people go through the orientation center, and we have. Well, many times when that happens, those individuals are served using VR money, you know, basic support money, so they're not really part of the Over the Line program, but they're in the vocational rehab track with the goal of Homemaker, okay? Mm-hmm. So essentially, when people elect to go to the orientation center, they're electing to go into another different track of service. I think that's something we need to revisit in terms of available funding if the Rehab Act is reauthorized. With the current language intact, that would increase older blind funds to Nebraska to a higher level, $350,000 a year instead of $225,000. That's a significant increase. And I haven't really discussed that at a management level because it's not reality yet. We don't have the money in the hand, and it's hard to get too excited about that. So here. But I anticipate that will happen at some point. And when it does, that might be something to look at, whether or not we should use older blind money to support all cases involving independent living all cases that have a goal of Homemaker for people going to the orientation center if they are 55 years or older. Am I answering your question?
Yeah, so that would be the people who, if they're 55 and older and have the goal of homemaking. Now, what happens if somebody is 55 and older and has a different vocational goal? Would they... I'm confused about the whole money thing. How does that work?
I'd like to comment on that. Because of the high incidence of blindness in the later years, and that is starting at, you know, 55 and 65 is where it starts increasing a lot, the majority of voc rehab clients are older. And so, you know, never forget that. The majority of all of our clientele are in the older age groups.
Yeah.
And so the population is so large that the additional funds specifically for old or blind that are within the independent living chapter of the Rehab Act, that's the reason that there's a specific section for serving older blind persons. But I think even the two folks that are here speaking are kind of a good example of one individual has a vocational goal. And if you don't mind my asking, Bob, what's your age?
Yeah, I'm a great big old 7 and an 80-81.
All right. Well, there you go. Good, thank you. And so if a person has a specific vocational goal, whatever their age, the basic support funding is clearly appropriate for the services for that person. Someone, I think, more like Betty, who is independent living focus, and I don't know for sure about, you know, goals and all that, but you've talked to us about additional back problems and such, and so when there's more health involvement and a person is not looking for employment, which I think is true, isn't it, Betty, that you're
may I say something?
Please,
else,
yes.
That's why I have become involved with this, because I don't want to go to a nursing home.
Right.
And as long as I can take care of myself, and I've had to learn how to do that in a different way, then I'll be happy.
Perfect.
I would like to do some volunteer work, but since I can't drive a car, I haven't been able to do that. But I could still do some of the duties that I was doing when I was working.
Mm-hmm.
But, like I said before, it's transportation.
But thanks, Betty. That's more the example of what the independent living older blind funds are focused for.
This is Nancy. I was just going to add, Nancy Farrell. I was going to say the last time I was in the orientation center was about 2 weeks ago. There was a woman there, Barb, who was probably in her mid-70s for a 3-day stay, and there was a woman starting the center. And the woman starting the center was from Scotts Bluff.
Thank you. Jill's Geneva. Sorry.
This is Dorothy. Bob, what is your vocational goal?
My vocational goal? I'd like to get back into computer programming again. But I think, in all fairness, it would probably be like entry level rather than a programmer analyst like I was. Mm-hmm. Just to be able to work under somebody to do work that is more at an entry level.
Now, you say you're 81?
71.
Oh, 71, okay.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Wow, you're pretty young looking for 71.
About
81.
Bob Deaton. It just occurred to me, you know, you were making mention of the baby boomers coming along in bigger population, and that one out of four when we get to be 80 years old is going to be blind and stuff. I'm just wondering, you know, I know that the blind people are the, you know, kind of the minority group that, you know, we fight to have a commission and so forth instead of getting lost in the rehabilitation thing altogether. I'm just wondering that, you know, as we progress down the road and where are more and more blind people, if there's, you know, going to be a day when we won't be the minority group anymore.
That's true. By the time you reach 90, it's 50%.
Yeah, so
by the time you reach 100, we rule the world.
I like that.
Okay, I like that idea.
I like that. But I just, you know, I'm just thinking that, you know, maybe that should be one of our selling points, that, you know, that we are a minority right now, but we're growing in population because people are living longer, and so little things are going wrong, like going blind and, you know, losing hearing and stuff, but, you know, that's something to keep in mind, that, you know, maybe there'll be more answers for us if we just hang in there.
Barbara.
Yes.
Someone in the back would like to speak.
Yes, my name is Joe Janine. I'm 85, so I think I can speak for older people. Now, if you want to get funds for older people, all the people that are, let's see, and politics. They all know the most, the group that's most likely to vote is the older people. So put it to them that way. If they want the older vote, they're going to give money to the older people.
Good point.
Good for you.
Yeah.
It is true, though.
Oh, I had another thought, if I could, in terms of center training versus the other more localized. One of the reasons, I mean, we've had either home teaching individualized, you know, kind of spread out over a long period of time, and then we've had the option of the center, and for specifically for older people, the option of the home teaching plus. It's my hope that as we have more of these localized kind of mini home teaching plus sessions across the state, that people will be able to get the individualized, or I mean the more intensive training at the local level, as opposed to coming to the center. Not everybody, obviously, but that for some people who are older and maybe have the homemaker goal, this localized training could perhaps give them the intensive training that they need as opposed to the center.
Yeah, one of the things that I wonder about that, you know, and we're brainstorming, but I think that for everybody, it's good to have options, intergenerational options, and I don't know. I mean, that's one of the things that I wonder about, if that is the trend, that's the kind of direction that we're going. If that we want to make sure that there are those kinds of options. I think as long as we make sure that people know that there are consumer organizations out there that are intergenerational and that kind of thing for networking purposes and for advocacy purposes and education of the public purposes and all of that, that I think that niche will be filled. But we need to be careful about, that kind of thing, if it gets to be
too focused on one model.
Yeah.
I agree, and I guess maybe I was spending too much time talking about one approach, because we're trying to look at these different things.
Yeah.
That is true. I think that's something we all want to promote, options as far as individualizing what people need and letting them know that they have options. I believe that does happen. I should like to also point out that the oldest individual to go through the orientation center, I believe, was 85. So the orientation center has been available to that population. It hasn't been closed. And that is my report, unless there's other issues that the commissioners would like to go into.
Well, thank you very much, Bob, and Bob, and Betty, and Joe, and everybody who participated, Nancy, and Pearl, and everybody. And
I'd like to say one more thing. Well, something you can't learn by having a lesson once a month. Like computers, you don't learn computers once a month. One day, a couple hours once a month. That needs to be changed. Well, you just teach people in groups. Maybe you could teach them at least 4 or 5 or 10 at once and have them come more frequently.
Okay. That's a comment well taken. Now, let's see. We are, we're actually doing what we are scheduled to be doing, because we're in the period of public comment. So, was that Betty?
Oh, yes.
Okay.
I'm 84, and I can remember the day when I was small, when people were deaf or blind, they were either institutionalized or they were kept in the home. So see how far we've traveled in just my lifetime. That covers a pretty long period, I'll bet you. But it's getting better all the time. And I think probably the reason is because all of us working together for the good of everybody. Because we can do good for sighted people as well as they can do good for us. There's a lot of things that not myself, I'm not speaking on myself now, but in being in these organizations, I have seen that blind people can do things sometimes better than sighted people can.
I also want to take a second to really express my gratitude to Bob Deaton. Of all the focus topics that we've done over the years, I don't think anybody has given a better written pre-report and information that I really thought it was valuable, and I really appreciate you taking the extra time to do a good job on the report and get us information. I really can't think of a better focus report that I've seen in all these years.
I'd second that notion. I think we have the right man in the right place. Bob does an excellent job in his public relations and the whole bit. So
it was very helpful. I mean, I thought I knew what you were going to be talking about, but I learned lots of new things from those reports.
I appreciate that. I do believe that services to older blind consumers is a very important part of what we do as an agency, but I also believe that it's not the most understood part of what we do. And so I really wanted to take the opportunity to help you understand this and also give me any input as to how we can make services the best it can be.
Well, we do appreciate the work that you have gone to, and having it come to us over the time, you know, between the last meeting and now in preparation was also very helpful, because when we get things that we can kind of, you know, think about over the time and get ourselves prepared, that really is useful. And it was a variety of things that came, and we do appreciate that.
I have one thing that this is a public thing, but it still relates to the visually impaired. It was stated back there about computer training. And when I was at the Home Teaching Plus, one of the areas that was taught is the technical aspect. And this one woman, when she went blind, she really enjoyed her computer. She really truly did. And after she went blind, well, let's face it, a blind person does not use the mouse. And if you're a sighted person, you try to operate your computer without a monitor. That's fun. But anyway, she was real discouraged because she really did enjoy working with the computer. They took her upstairs, and of course they had a screen reader called JAWS, that's Job Access with Speech, on there, and they just kind of showed her what JAWS can do for her and how it can tell her what's on the screen if she doesn't have to see. And she came down all excited. I just gotta have me one of those things. She was just, oh man, I mean, she was really turned on. And so what I'm saying is that the teaching the blind how to use their computers, even though it's maybe not for a profession or a livelihood, it's a wonderful thing. The whole world opens up to you when a blind person can just because they're blind, the computer's not turned off. So that is important. Somehow or other, people who want to learn need to learn, and it does take more than once a month. And sometimes there is individual training that's necessary for some people. So I don't know how the agency can get around that, but this is one aspect of training that's kind of important.
Thank you very much. I will mention that there are blind folks who have their livelihood based on using the computer with alternatives. I know at least one programmer analyst who does that, and so one of the things that, anytime we get the opportunity to do it, we want to do is to let you know that you don't need to shortchange yourself by thinking that because you don't really know how it's done yet or whatever that it can't be done by a blind person. You know, there are a lot of people who do make their living using computers with alternatives, and I absolutely know that the whole thing of working with the computer is something that people need a lot of, and we want to have as many opportunities as possible. And you know, one of my favorite things to do, since we're in public comment, is to teach folks how to use the computer.
Yes.
And we're working on ways of expanding what we're doing with that. Not, you know, I don't do it for the commission, but it is something that we definitely see the need for.
Yes, I'd like to speak up again.
Okay.
All blind people don't use JAWS. They don't all use screen readers. So it would be very helpful if any time the commission or the blind group would send out their emails in large print for those of us that prefer to use magnification. I use a magnifying glass to read email. And it would help if it all came out in large print instead of small print. I noticed that some of the things coming from the commission come in smaller than normal print. And I feel it should be in large print for those of us that are not going to use a screen reader. Thank you.
This is Sean. Joe, give me a call sometime early next week and I'll tell you how to fix your Outlook Express so that it everything
comes in. I don't use Outlook Express.
Well, whatever you use, give
web
me...
Web TV.
I use Web TV.
I get, there's a way, as I had somebody use it. Okay.
And before we end the public comment, could we introduce the new people here?
Yeah, starting with you, Sean. You came in since we had introductions, so go ahead and introduce yourself. Sorry. What you do and where you're from.
Okay. I'm Sean Jernis. I am the program specialist, technical guru, all-around geek for the Omaha district. I have all sorts of descriptions for it. Also, I brought with me my girlfriend Mary Lou, who's sitting in the back of the room there. And we had a little problem with one of our pieces of equipment this morning, so we were running a little behind.
My name is Janet McCray. I'm the administrative assistant for Radio Talking Book Service here in Omaha, and I'm the coordinator of the Listening Link program, which is what I've been asked to talk to you about this morning.
And then could we go to the back and have introductions?
My name is Donald. I'm from Omaha.
Donald.
Lily. Donald Lily.
Okay. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Jenny O'Kell. I'm from Omaha.
Welcome to you.
I'm Vanessa McElhern. I'm from Omaha.
All right. Welcome.
I'm Ronnie Angelo Kellogg. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska.
Welcome to you as well.
And then my second, I'm from Omaha.
Excuse me? Your
then
name?
My second.
Okay.
I'm Ronnie Wingfield, I'm from Omaha, Nebraska.
Could you speak up, please?
I'm Ronnie Wingfield, and I'm from Omaha.
Thank you.
I'm Aaron Peterson, I'm a junior creative prep from Omaha.
Could you try that one again, too? I bet you can say that a little bit louder and slower. Please.
I'm Aaron Peterson, I'm a junior at Creighton Prep, Omaha.
Thank you. Welcome.
I'm Gordon McClain. I'm a junior at Benson, in Omaha.
Jordan McCoy. He's a Benson. He's from the school of Benson.
Benson Bunny.
Okay. That's everybody. Thank you. To you too.
Now we're past.
Okay.
And I might mention that all the last ones you heard are part of our TAPS group, and who will be providing lunch for you.
Oh, what does TAPS mean?
Nancy, you want to give that actual definition so I know the words?
The kids created it. It's Teenage Adventures in Blindness.
Teen Adventures in Blindness Skills.
Skills.
Blindness?
She forgot, yes.
I'm glad you guys can keep tabs on Nancy.
And that will be edited out of the tape.
No, actually, we don't edit our tapes.
So be careful what you say.
Okay, thank you very much, and we're glad to have you here, and we look forward to what you're going to provide to us in the way of repast in a little while. In the meantime, we'll be continuing with food for thought with the radio talking book services update, and we welcome you to talk to us, Janet McCray, about listening link and whatever else you'd like to share with us.
Okay, well, I guess basically I'm just here to let you know a little about the particular service that we provide through Listening Link, and give you some of the programs that we have done. We were organized as a separate part of Radio Talking Book Service in 1994, although it had started in 1992 with just a few assignments, people that we knew. Basically, we're a textbook reading service. We put texts on tape for students who apply. Since 1994, we have made contact and done assignments for over 24 organizations and institutions, umbrella groups. We have done all grade levels. We have done public schools, private schools, business schools, vocational training schools. We have done manuals for employee training. We have done assignments for a lot of schools in Nebraska, a lot of schools in Iowa. We have done schools in Florida. We have done schools in New York. We have trained a group in Arkansas to do their own program so that they can have a similar program there for their clients. During that time, and under the auspices of those institutions, we have read for 264 individuals. The majority of our requests have been college, but we have done some elementary, we have done some secondary. All assignments to us come through special needs counselors who have verified eligibility, and it's the counselor that we work with at our office. According to a survey that we did in 2000, 90% of Listening Link clients complete their courses successfully. During that time, while we've been serving 24 institutions and 264 clients, we have done 935 projects. Those assignments are all done on 90-minute tapes, and most projects takes between 20 and 25 tapes, so you can kind of figure how many tapes we have recorded in those 10 years. We've done every conceivable subject. Interesting that you were talking about computers. Yes, there are lots of people out there that are blind that are majoring in computers. We do all the reading for them. We do, not all, but we do a lot of reading for computer books. We have two or three readers. That's their specialty. That's what they do. We do the basics. We do English, history, math, science. But we also do a lot of specialties. We do a lot of medicine. We do a lot of law. We've done things like motorcycle repair and massage therapy. We have volunteers who can tape in foreign languages, and we have done tapes in Spanish, French, and Greek.
Wow.
All of those tapes are done by volunteers, and we have about 50. We have a core group of about 50 volunteers who do all the taping. Most of them have done several projects. Some of them have done over 30 projects during that period of time. Some of them just go from one project to the next. Some just want to do one a year. It depends on them. So that's basically what we do. Now, why is it a necessary service? There's the recording for the blind, as you well know, and counselors are requested to please check that before they ask us. We don't want to record something that's already on tape. And we don't, seldom do we do fiction. We're not going to do Shakespeare. You can go out and get a tape of Shakespeare anywhere, you know. And so we're not going to do something that's already been done. That's a waste of our volunteers' time, and their time is valuable to us. But we do offer some things that others don't offer. And I think the main thing we do is we read by syllabus. The last time you took a college class, or mostly college classes, you know that professors love to skip around in the book. They leave out chapters. They jump all of a sudden to the appendix. They want these vocabulary words, but they don't want these problems. They want this group read and that group not read. Well, they give us a syllabus, and that's what we do. We do it exactly as they want it. We do it in exactly the order they want it, so that the student can go right along with the class and not have to worry about, well, here's chapter 3, but I really don't need it until 2 months from now, so, because that's the way we do it. We do it only by requirement and assignment. Another advantage that we have is that we have this constant communication between the professor and the counselor and me and the reader, and then the client talking to the counselor, so that all of a sudden the professor says, as they're wont to do in colleges, oh, by the way, I think I'll go back and do chapter 3 after all. Then the client tells the counselor tells us, we tell the reader, and it's done right then, so that the student doesn't have to wait. So that's a real important thing too. And they can call in and say, you know, we really don't need the appendix read, or yes, we really do need the alternative readings, a list of those, so that the student can use them. And those are the type of things that we do all the time. Another advantage, the client receives the tapes not as one lump, not the whole book, not the whole assignment. They receive them a couple of tapes a week, so that they're getting the tapes just as they need them for the assignment. Actually, that makes it real nice for our volunteers too, because a lot of them are working, they do their taping at night, and it's much better for them if they don't have to sit down and do a 600 page book by the end of the week type thing. So we do it in segments. Another advantage, we keep the original. We make them copies of the tapes. We keep the original. They're college students. They tend to dump their coffee on their tape and spill their ketchup from their hamburger and so on and so forth. Or they rewind too fast and, you know, then they call up and the tape's ruined. So we kept the original. The other reason we keep the original is sometimes Metro is one of these. Metro has a class called Effective Human Relations. Every student has to take that class. It's the same book. They've used it for years. We made one tape of it. We're never gonna, I mean, you know, we don't need a volunteer to do that over and over and over again. So we keep the tape. Then if some student needs it, we've got it already on tape, and we can run it off for them. We don't want our volunteers wasting their time reading assignments. And the last advantage that we have, I think, is that we match our subject with our volunteers. So if a computer book comes in, it goes to a computer person to read. If a science book comes in, it goes to a science person to read. Sometimes we can't match, but as much as we can, we read those. And that's really important. And the reason I know that's really important is if we can't find an algebra reader, I have to do it. And believe me, they know the terms a lot better than I do. And some of those are really strange terms to me. So if we can match, then they're pronouncing things right, they're able to do the formulas, they're able to do symbols, things that I don't know that maybe someone out in the field would know. So that's a really important thing too. A lot of our volunteers are professional people in the field that they're reading for, and so that's really important. For instance, one of our person who does a lot of medical books is head of the nursing department at College of St. Mary's. Obviously, she knows her medical books, and so when we need one read, that's who we go to.
Okay.